I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Season 3, Episode 12. As usual, share us, tell us, tell someone who likes box sets to listen to us. Email them the link. Just click share on whatever you're listening this on and share it with somebody. We've said this every episode since time began. Season 3, episode 12, Howell and Jamie here. Nice to have you with us. A few things to deal with this week. Lots of business and an interview-y, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
It's going to fall apart. They all do.
Why don't you tell us about the other one that fell apart? We predicted it.
Well, in a classic M. Night Shyamalan twist, he pulled out last minute on his interview junket. They always do.
All the big ones do, don't they?
Because they get close and they go, you know what? I don't want to do this with my life. Maybe they realise that actually, no, this isn't going to affect the mark. Maybe they get like a bigger interview with the...
Hang on a minute. They're cancelling a set of interviews. It's not just us. I want to make that clear. When these famous people cancel, it's not because they've gone
personal.
The box out. What? They cancel the whole kit and caboodle.
The whole goddamn thing.
And it is annoying because it is like, you know, you range your day. Give me an example, Jamie, of how this has affected your life.
I set some time aside to have a chat with M. Night Shyamalan and ended up just eating bread.
You see? Then he's got to eat bread. At different times of the day than he expected.
Half a tiger loaf, in fact.
At the end of last week's podcast, I went
very quiet.
Interesting
fact about tiger loaf. It makes your wee smell funny.
Does it really?
A bit like asparagus.
I've started eating no-carb bread.
Oh, what? You're not one of those new-age hippies, are you? Well,
no. What
you
is
better
it?
Have some kind of, intestinal difficulty.
Well, yeah, Sarah's not really supposed to eat the wheat. Is it no wheat? What is it? I don't know.
Gluten-free.
Gluten-free. Yeah, she's not supposed to eat that. She's got issues, and so she doesn't eat it. And
that's
as a result,
understandable.
But do you know what? You would love this bread, Jamie, because you know what? It actually makes it taste a lot more like cake. It still tastes like bread, but it's got a cakey texture, and it's quite Moorish.
Well, maybe I'll give it a try. I mean, you've certainly sold it to me there, but I mean, I like normal bread, you know, I'm a big fan of normal bread.
It's also like £4 a loaf.
Jesus Christ.
Exactly.
What kind of a hippie con is it?
It is a massive hippie con, because it's like, we'll remove something, and then it'll be twice as expensive.
Yeah, it's costing them less. Yeah, yeah. And they're charging more.
I watched three films this week. Oh, so yeah, we're talking to the director of the new Everest film, which you've probably seen advertised. We're talking to him on the show today. But first, we've got your news, we've got emails, and I want to tell you about the three films that I went to watch this weekend.
Okay.
First of all, on Friday night, I went to watch... I've forgotten.
Oh, wow.
Tell me something
really prepared for this convo.
I have. I've got... you wouldn't believe how prepared I am for this convo. You wait for my 24 review in a moment.
Oh.
What did I watch? Tell me what I might have watched on Friday.
Trainwreck at the cinema. Did you watch Trainwreck?
No, I watched that Out of Compton.
Yeah. About Jay-Z and...
No, Jamie. No.
Well, it's about Dr. Dre, isn't
yes,
it? Yeah.
Mixed up your black people there, Jamie. It is... he's from New York, and these people are from Compton, which is in LA. Just 5,000 miles separating them. But
of
course,
a rivalry, isn't it?
None of them white, which is Jamie's problem there.
That wasn't the problem, Howell, okay.
You just don't know your rap music like I do. And it's a phenomenal film. Like, one of the best films I've seen all year. It makes you... There's this thing people say when they're trying to get into taste and...
It's something my dad said to me years ago when I first started sort of trying to persuade him to listen to music that wasn't just classical music. And he said, like, you know, I can understand rap music, but I'll never feel it. I'll never enjoy it, right? And that's what a lot of people say that about things. I don't feel it. And this film makes you feel rap music, or at least that particular, you know, N.W.A. the time that they came out, and Ice Cube and his lyrics and Dr. Dre's approach, all of that, it gives you, you are angry. You are angry enough to want to write those lyrics. If only
the police.
Exactly. If only you had the same talent, you could. Meanwhile, in Chorley, at the same age, 1988, Jamie Atherton was writing his own lyrics.
Yes, I was. Window dreams. The window dreams of another life. No one else can make me feel this way. The window dreams of yesterday.
Now,
the
window dreams. There were lyrics, so how did the music get into this? When did the music
I wrote that music in my head, all composed without any skilled, learned practice in musical ability, but I wrote it actually whilst looking out of a window. Funny story, out of a window, and it was raining, and I was sat on the windowsill, and I thought, oh, window dreams, and I was having a dream.
See, just like straight out of Compton, you write about what you know. In their case, it was incredible police brutality. In Jamie's case, it was looking out of a window. Hashtag first class problems.
Right, actually, the thing about my window is it's not that, it's not actually what you think. I have some binoculars at my window, and I could see into the windows of the local police station, and I saw some very interesting things.
You
so
didn't.
There, you see, F the police of Chorley Borough Council. Okay. on in those windows.
I want to issue an apology. I know I've said this before. Whenever I listen to the Box Set Pod back, I realise how many things I say wrong, how many facts I get wrong.
Yeah, you always get things wrong, Howell.
And I mean, it's unbelievable. But then, because of the new way we record this, I've got to like mix it down. There's two different channels, Jamie channel and Howell channel. So for the first time last week, I actually saw the amount of speech on each channel, right? I could see a visual representation of the amount of effort that comes out of my mouth compared to your mouth. Oh my God. Like, 95% of the noise was coming from my channel. No wonder I have to get so much wrong. If you throw that much crap at the wall, some ain't gonna stick.
It's an issue.
See? Point proven. Unbelievable. Why don't you tell everyone about the competition we've got running?
Yeah, best email wins the Entourage box set. Tasty. Right. Oh, we've got some emails, haven't we?
Well done. Setting you up perfectly for that.
Do you want me to read them, or why don't you read them?
Go for them, and then I'll give you my review of binge-watching 24 for the first time.
Okay. Let's start off with an actual email about Entourage.
Okay.
It's from Will Edwards. He says, if this hasn't been won already, then I didn't listen to Rock FM for around 2 weeks as Radio Wave caught my ear with some darn competition I didn't win. Only to tune back in to Rock FM Breakfast Show for you guys and not to be on. Frantic googling the local news, thinking you'd been called for some crazy phobia Friday. Alas, you weren't, and you have a new show away from Rock FM. Think this is worthy of winning, even if you've already given it away? I'm afraid not, Will.
What you've just done, Will, is wander into a room and you've labelled yourself
just barging.
A prize pig, haven't you?
Yes.
You've basically tattooed across your forehead, prize pig.
Why would we ever give...
to listen to you on the radio, and I went to another station because they were giving a prize away. So my loyalty is entirely based on who's giving away the prize. Yeah. Now I've found you, turns out you're giving away a prize.
Yeah, I mean, the nerve of you, Will. You got some ball-faced nerve, you, Will. I'll give you that. You get credits for that, but that is not going to win you a box set of Entourage.
Now, again, I don't know anything, but isn't the term bald, as in bald, what you are, Jamie? Bald-faced cheek?
Rather than it's bald-faced. It's imagining
that's
you've got
quite
a ball.
An image.
The ball on your face. You got a ball
balls
on your face.
On your face, Will. Yeah. That's what he's saying. You've got balls on your face.
Here's another email.
Will, you know what? On the other hand,
Why not? You know, we'll get you. We'll put you in the final
Will,
draw.
I'm going to say it right now. Whatever you aren't in. You aren't going to win
it. I'm putting you in, Will. I am putting you in. Because at least he's honest about it. He's rocked up and he's gone, I'm not going to try and impress you with my email. I'm just going to say, can I have it? Fair enough. You know?
That's a disgrace, Howell.
The world needs capitalists as much as they need,
you know what,
activists. And we tend to get the activist emails.
I think it's the Mayo, Simon Mayo and Commode's pod.
They
get some wonderful emails. I mean, some really well-written emails. Yeah. I don't give it to Ballface Will any credit for coming along and just going, give me your entourage box set.
Problem is, now you've labelled him as Ball-Faced Will, I feel like he needs to go in there because you've labelled him as this. I've got this image of a guy wandering around with balls on his face.
Yeah, it's a Channel 5 documentary waiting to happen. I actually got... I was at my in-laws the weekend and... I stole a book of freaks that they've got around at their house. I didn't steal it, but I took it. I'm looking at this book of freaks, and it's fascinating.
Did you bring your tortoise back?
I did, actually, yeah.
Wow, how long have they had that for, then?
7 months since we've been since we got married.
Wow.
Pretty much.
Caring for his
pets.
And
in this book of freaks, there's a three-legged man, a four-legged woman, the Siamese twins, bearded ladies, midgets and dwarfs. There's a limbless wonder. There's someone called the limbless wonder.
Oh, God.
Fantastic fatties, feral children, strong men and strong women, and luminous people. Check that out.
Jamie, I mean, all of those, kind of fair enough for its audience, but feral children?
Yeah, feral children. As a child in here, Howell, was brought up by gazelles.
No, there isn't.
There bloody is.
There's not, though, is there?
Right, Howell, I am not even lying to you.
Yeah, I'm sure it's in the book, but that didn't happen.
Let me find the article.
Gazelles can't bring up a child.
Howell, this child, he had the speed of a puma as well. I mean, you wouldn't believe it, but this child, he was about 6 years old.
If you want more of this great kind of podcast, listen to Carl Pilkington and Ricky Gervais' podcast, because it's very, very similar. Very similar.
Oh, really?
We're always telling you, like, what, you never heard Carl Pilkington going on about bearded ladies?
Gazelle boy.
Yep.
Supposedly feral, was caught with incredible difficulty because he could run really fast, obviously.
You know how that story starts with one word, supposedly? That's your clue.
Yeah, but no.
The whole thing begins on sand for me. Supposedly. Carry on.
Oh, yeah, supposedly he was running with a herd of wild gazelle in the Arabian desert, and according to a letter in a John Bull magazine, those most graceful animals had brought him up, and he could match their incredible bursts of speed on his two legs, which makes it all the more remarkable because, of course, gazelles are four-legged. Let's not forget. Fantastic story. There's more to come.
Supposedly. Well, fantastic. Well...
Anyway, why don't we get into that? So let's go
thanks
back
to
the
Ball-Faced Will for that.
Ball-Faced Will, yes.
Thank you, Will. Keep your emails coming. studio@theboxsetpod.com. Jamie may label you as Ball-Faced.
Here's another one as well from Daniel Knight. It says, talking of Hugh Laurie, there's a box set I'd recommend 100%.
Ooh.
House. Very clever. Very good acting. Deep characters. Twists. And WTF episodes. It wasn't very well heard in the UK, so perhaps some people may have missed one. One sentence review for those who have never heard of it. Think House, play on the word Holmes. His best friend Wilson, instead of Watson, he solves baffling medical mysteries that have some basis on real-life stories. Mm-hmm. The only downside, the worst representation of real MRIs ever. But that's Hollywood. Daniel Knight. Good email.
What I like about Daniel... A lot like you, Jamie, becoming Carl Pilkington and not knowing it, is that Daniel has stumbled his own way across what the rest of us knew 20 years ago about House, which is that it's based on Sherlock Holmes, and I would question the word deep, Daniel. I'm not sure if it's that deep.
No, really, I'd agree with that sentence.
I would question that.
But that's true. The Sherlock link is very much a big part of the House world, isn't it? Watson, Wilson, well, yeah, House, Holmes. Yeah.
And it is it's addictive.
It's a great show. I'm trying to finish because I gave up after four seasons originally. I've gone back and I've got to season seven.
yeah.
trying to stick with it. But I have to say, as much as I love it, it does get a bit tired. It's like a tired old shoe. It's been worn down the same path too many times.
The same old route. The train goes around the track in exactly the same way every time. I mean, you're going to end with a musical montage. You're going to have... They're not going to know what it is at first. They're going to think it's something else. They're going to make it worse. Then they're going to go around to the house. They're going to find something that's affected him or her. And then they will eventually save them, apart from on the odd surprising episode.
And you know what? That's the thing. Like they always end the series with a really good episode. That, you know, a different one that changes the dynamic of the show. And you just think, you know what? Just stick with that different dynamic for a while.
That's
a bit
right.
longer. But they never do. They go back to the old twists and stuff. So I do love House. I do get it. But I do think it should have probably ended after 6 series. I think it went on a little bit long.
Phil Smith tweeted us at the Box Set Pod asking for some advice on what to watch. I can't find his damn tweet. Can you?
Oh, leave it with me, Howell.
Yeah, you see if you can find it. I can't find it.
I'll find it.
But thanks, Phil. Make sure you email us, because the deal is our favourite email, for whatever subjective reason, and these are your terms and conditions, our favourite. End of. It can be as crooked as we like. We will give away this box set of Entourage. If I can still find it in my house after all of this time. All right.
Okay, here's Phil Smith's tweet.
Yep.
Okay, as autumn appears to be here already, what box set can you recommend? Preferably no more than 2 seasons.
Oh.
For a couple who enjoy thriller/suspense, but not too dark. Maybe some humour even.
It's
no
Dexter.
Zombies also.
It's Dexter, Phil. Perfect for autumn.
More than 2 seasons, though.
I know it is, but I'm afraid I can't help you there. I mean, you could try Gotham. Gotham's...
plus, you know,
I've just finished Gotham's good.
What's wrong with more than 2 seasons? I mean, some people just have trouble committing to long-form TV shows that have been going on for more than 2 series.
Just stop after 2 series if you want.
You can take it at your own pace, Phil.
I'm telling you, Dexter is a great, you know, the nights are cold, let's get in, pop Dexter on.
It's quite, I mean, it is dark, though, isn't it, Dexter?
Yeah, but it's daytime TV dark. I mean, it's not dark. It's not...
Yeah, I'd say Dexter's quite a good one to choose on.
So I decided that I would take on 24, right?
Okay.
On my own, decided I'd take on 24. And I've never seen it. So it's now, what, 15 years old or something like that? It's old now, 24.
Yeah, 24, yeah. And it is coming back, but yeah.
And some would say it was the first box set ever. You know?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, that and West Wing, and like these were the forerunners of
I think
sets.
24 was one of the first shows that really caught fire of the new sort of era, wasn't it? It was up there. It came out about the same time as Sopranos, and had a caught on to a different audience, but it caught on to that twist audience, the audience that loves to be on constant cliffhangers.
Oh my God! Right, well. I wrote a diary, okay?
Ooh.
I've written a diary.
We are in a loose end.
Binge watching 24, episode 1.
Yeah.
Exciting. This is much better than I expected. It's dramatic, smart, underplayed by Sutherland. Episode 2. Love the mix of action and politics. Also a plane crash. Sorry. It's like West Wing meets Prison Break meets Homeland. It really is those 3 things. Well described, Howell. Episode 3. How are they going to make this last for 24 episodes? Episode 4.
Each episode's an hour, isn't it?
Yeah. It's real time, but at minus 15 minutes because of the ad breaks.
Of course.
Episode 4. Have begun watching cushions in the living room. Rabbits, wallpaper, anything to help get past all the suspense.
Really?
Episode 5, tapping fingers impatiently. Episode 6, is there a film I could watch instead of this? Episode 11, jumped a few. Oh, for God's sake, hurry up. Episode 12, every scene is people talking in riddles mixed with a cliffhanger. Episode 13, using fast forward to get beyond the crap. Episode 14, seriously considering just watching the first and last 2.4 minutes of every episode. It's all threat and no cigar. Episode 15, could I watch the first and last episode of every series? Could I do that? Episode 16, it should have been called 12.
Episode 17. For goodness sake, don't binge watch 24. Further thoughts. Time has passed well. Only the phones look old in it. It is full of suspense. But it is there is that question of this came out before the era of binge watching. Mm. And it absolutely drives you nuts to watch them back to back. You need to, you know, if I do four in a row, I'm just like, oh, for God's sake, get on with it. This is the format of every scene. Scene begins, conversation between two people, and they talk in riddle. They go, you know what we should do? We should go and we should admit that this has happened to the public. And someone else says, if you do that, how will you ever solve this? He goes, but this is the right thing to do. It doesn't matter what the right thing to do is. Those people will win. Those people will win whether you do it or not. That's every scene. And at the end of the scene, kind of some decision is made. But really, it's a conversation about nothing happening, interspersed with Jack Bauer doing a lot of action where very little happens. You know, he's trying to get from point A to point B, and there are 24 other points in between. And it is good, it drives me up the wall like Prison Break did in that sense. So my question is this. I've got 7 series to go with this bloody thing. Seriously, I am really, really tempted to just watch the first and last episode of every series.
Good question.
I've done the 4-episode rule.
Yeah.
What should I do? studio@theboxsetpod.com. How much of it did you watch?
24? Or maybe I never watched a full episode of it.
You never watched a full episode? Okay, Jamie can't advise me, so you're going to have to advise me.
I can't advise you, Howell. It's going to have to be down to other people, but it's a good question. Should Howell just watch the first and last episode?
I've done the 4-episode rule. Come on. Adam Comstiff has emailed. We had him on the podcast a few months ago. He's just a listener. He's just a listener.
But he's also kind of a friend.
Yeah. But I'm not sure about the friend bit anymore. Listen to this. While we're on it, we exchanged recommendations when I was on. Yours stank. It takes a lot for us to utterly abandon a series, but one of yours was well and truly dumped. I haven't taken on the other two, as you stank me out so bad. Adam, the reason we give more than one recommendation, first of all, is because this is an art, not a science. We're trying to cover all bases. Maybe you will like one of the other two. In fact, it's almost certain that you will. But because you're a very particular kind of snob, it means that you're going to have to seek that out. You're going to have to try the other two out, okay? But I know that takes...
What did we recommend?
I'm guessing he tried Chuck. It's the only thing that I can imagine I've been banging on about.
No. Adam is not a Chuck fan, and he's never going to be a Chuck fan.
I disagree completely. Adam...
But Adam isn't built for Chuck.
I just called Adam a snob, and that's where you're coming from with this. But I don't think he is.
No, but some people aren't built for Chuck, Owl.
He's built for it. Everyone's built for Chuck. You don't know what you're talking about. You've got to give it 4 episodes.
Anyway, in his email, he also said, still haven't watched The West Wing or The Sopranos.
I know, it's just a child wandering in the woods. Just
even
a child.
I have no fucking frame of reference here. You don't. You've got to get onto those. I mean, where are you on those? Get straight onto Sopranos and West Wing.
I mean, Adam, give us some more information. What was it that you gave up on? If it was Chuck and you gave up before 4 episodes, which I highly suspect, then you have no frame of reference. You're not allowed an opinion. You know that. That's the rule of the podcast. You can only have an opinion. If you have 4 episodes in, then you can make your mind up. If you did watch the 4 episodes, fair enough. Try one of the other two. But seriously, why haven't you... How come you've never done West Wing or Sopranos?
I mean, those two. What? I mean, for someone like Adam, I'm actually disappointed in you.
Yeah.
I've just lost a little bit of respect for you as a human being.
Whether in your head Chuck is, or whatever you've watched, whether you've watched, you know, it's the equivalent of somebody walking in and saying, I have listened to my Britney Spears album that you recommended, or I have listened to my Pink Floyd album that you've recommended. I listen to one track and I decide that I don't like it. By the way, I've never listened to music before. That's what you're saying, Adam.
Yeah. Absolutely, Adam.
Completely wandering in the woods.
Yeah, yeah. He does mention, though, early on, he says, he talks about Masters of Sex and weird bloody show. Couldn't agree more. It is a very weird show. I'm not sure I'm enjoying it. Only, he says, only one even vaguely sympathetic character. Totally agree. It's hard to get into stuff where there's no sympathetic characters.
Well, you talked about that a few weeks ago, didn't you? And
yeah, also, he mentions The Good Wife. Surely the key 6 degrees of separation show. Every episode, someone from another show crops up. It's so true. It's got people from West Wing, it's got people from The Wire, it's got people from Sopranos in it.
I'll tell you what, I'm finding that there's a big crossover between Prison Break and 24 as well.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that some shows where they're based, because I think Good Wife's set in Chicago, so you get a lot of that East Coast sort of that kind of part of America.
Yeah.
The same actors who were working in that part of the country all kind of revolve around the same shows. And you should watch The Good Wife, though, Howell.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, right, but yeah, there is a lot of actors in that show from different...
Right, I'm getting a phone call from London. Wait a sec. We've just cut out us doing a line test, because it was very, very boring.
Audio admin
with London. It's going to be an interesting one this week. Anyway, we'll see if it actually goes. Anyway, Adam's loving the podcast, wondering why it's sounding better since he heard it last. Asks if we've got a producer. No, Adam. No. And if anything, Adam, it hasn't changed a bit. It's you. You need to look at yourself in this situation.
Right? Look at yourself naked in the mirror and judge yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
You say, what is that? What has that got better?
Put your defensiveness down, Adam. Pull down the walls. Pull down the brick walls in front of your naked body.
Look at your naked body and say, where did the producer go for that? Huh? Mm. And then think about sending an insulted email about our recommendations.
But there's always been rumours that Adam's extremely well hung, but he actually spread them, so...
Yeah, he did. And we'll pop Adam's email there into the... draw for the Entourage box set. Thanks very much, Adam.
Okay, so I do want to do some box set news.
Do it.
But before I do that, I just want to mention what I've been watching. First of all, TV-wise, I started... what's it called? The one on the cartoon on Netflix with the horse. BoJack Horseman.
BoJack Horseman, yeah.
Which is... you know what? It's weird. Like, I've been watching it. I've got 3 episodes in. Yeah. And I'm definitely going to continue.
Yeah.
And I'm liking it. I'm enjoying it. But I'm not laughing a lot. Like, I'm not actually doing lots of guffaw laughter. But I'm actually enjoying it still. I like the characters in it.
You watched the other one? The other animation? The Secret Agent Man?
Oh, Archer.
Archer.
Yeah, I've watched a bit. That's very funny.
It's hilarious. If you want to laugh.
Really good. Yeah, that's very funny, Archer. I've only really just started that as well, but it's really good, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's more laugh out loud funny, but I'm still quite enjoying BoJack. Yeah. Also, we watched another great film. It's been a bit of a Netflix weekend. Watched on this on Netflix, Babadook. It's in the Babadook, Owl.
Nope.
Oh, you shit your pants. Brilliant. I tell you, it's so scary. It's a brilliant, really scary film. Like, you know, very, very well told and very clever. Like, at the end of it, I wasn't sure about the ending. And then my wife explained it to me. And I went, oh, that is very clever. Because she's a she's a therapist, so she knows stuff. But it's a very good film. I really recommend it. It's a real psychological thriller. The Babadook.
I didn't tell you about the other two films I watched, did I?
You watched...
Pixels, Adam Sandler.
Pixels, that's meant to be crap, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not crap. It's very well made, and there's some very funny moments. Olaf from Frozen is in it, Josh Gad, another one who stood us up for an interview. And it's just not got the same finesse. Chris Columbus is the director, and it's very impressive looking, but the comedic... finesse isn't there. So if you've got a cast like that, Sandler, Josh Gad, lots of others, you've got the ability to pull off, albeit Sandler's type of humour, you've got the ability to pull off some really well-placed jokes. And actually, quite often the jokes aren't delivered very well, but the all-out star and the line-for-line funniest person in it is Peter Dinklage, aka Game of Thrones' Tyrion.
He is hilarious in it.
And yeah, he's very funny in real life. He's just he's a very funny guy. I've heard a few chats with him, interviews. And
you can tell
guy.
He's enjoying it a lot, and the others perhaps are, I don't know. It's just one of those things where I feel like it's quite a complicated technical film because it's about aliens using 80s computer games to take over the world. So yeah. There's lots of special effects and very impressive, but then there's just gags that are missed, and you go, oh, I wanted to... You know, for example, Josh Gad is supposed to be a bit of a loser friend, a bit of a geek, and he sings a song at one point with a band, and it should be like in The Wedding Singer when you get Do You Really Want to Hurt Me? It should have that sort of feel to it, but he's been physically very funny, but he's actually a really good singer, and it just makes the gag not as funny. And a comedic director would spot that straight away and go, okay, you need to sing this live and you need to make it bad. You know, come up with something to make it funny. And the joke just isn't quite there. It's not quite delivered right. And
well, that's Christopher Columbus. I mean, this is the same guy who made the two worst Harry Potter films.
I know. And he's a good guy, Christopher Columbus. He's got good vision and stuff. I think it's just that thing of working with the actors in detail that he falls back on. You know, if you think about those first two Harry Potters, visually amazing, but and right for what it is. But no. And the one I watched yesterday was Me, Earl and the Real Girl. And the Dying Girl, not the Real Girl. I'm thinking of Lars and the Real Girl. Me, Earl and the Dying Girl.
Oh, yeah. I like the trailer for that.
Is it
sad?
It's what you expect it to be.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure.
It's one of the reasons I've not wanted to watch the film The Fault in Our Stars.
Exactly.
Because
exactly.
It looks like I'm just going to be depressed for quite a while.
It really, really depressed me. And it is a really well-made film. But when you get to a certain age and you've seen three or four films like that, I think you begin to go, what use is this doing me? Nice for teenagers to watch this film and nice for people, you know, oh, let's count our blessings kind of thing. But actually, I'm just sat there going, this is horrendous. And I don't wish this upon anybody, least of all myself. So why am I sat imagining that I am in this position? It's a really nice film, really well made. Well, there we go. Carry on with the news.
Okay, so if you go to theboxsetpod.com/news, I've put some bits and bobs up there. A few bits I wanted to mention. Daniel Radcliffe has grown a beard in the Harry Potter vein. He's actually got a wizard beard going down. He's in a new TV show. It's the trailer's been released. It's a very good trailer, actually. It's a TV movie, basically, called Game Changers. It's about the launch of Grand Theft Auto, which went on to be the fastest... Check this. It was the fastest-selling entertainment title in history.
Wow.
In any entertainment world, the fastest selling.
Wow.
And Daniel Radcliffe plays one of the founders of Rockstar Games, who created Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
It's about his court battle with a Christian lawyer in America who Bill Paxton plays, about the release of the game. And it looks fascinating. And Daniel looks really street. And he's got a baseball cap on, and he's grown a really wispy beard. So it's worth checking out for just that.
Go
that
to
alone.
Universal Studios in Florida and go on the Twister ride, and you'll have Bill Paxton doing some of the greatest 90s introductions to the ride that you'll ever see. There is a man who takes his role seriously, even if it's to tell people that what you're about to experience is a terrifying twister.
I'm sure he got paid mightily for that performance. Other news, Apple are getting into original programming. So they're going to take on Netflix. They're going to take on Amazon Prime. They've announced that they will be creating their own original TV content. And there's a chance, because they're about to launch the latest Apple TV. You've got Apple TV, haven't you? How old?
I love it. I've got Apple TV and Now TV. And Apple TV is so much easier to use. Everything about it is easy to use. I love it.
Yeah, well, they're going to offer 25 channels, including the major television channels, but also they want to develop their own TV shows of the same caliber as Orange is the New Black or as Transparent. And they may even be getting into reality TV program making. That's the rumour. Plus, there's a rumour that they're going to buy their own Hollywood studio.
Wow. Now, this is interesting, isn't it? Because Apple have always been the delivery device for other people's content, whilst also making their own content in terms of apps and things like that. But actually, would this damage their share price? Because the creation of Apple Beats I'm not sure quite how well that's taken off.
Beats Radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Beats hasn't done that. It's kind of, it feels like they're moving into a subjective territory. You know, like with a phone, it's like you decide what the content is. Someone like Adam could use the phone because, and I could, and we could have different content on there because we've got different levels of snobby taste. Whereas now they're attaching that Apple logo to content that people can like or dislike. I think it's a good move. I think it's a wise move because the people who own the content are the ones who are going to win in the end. But it's a bold move for Apple.
Yeah, it's a bold move, but it's the way a lot of people are going. Netflix are actually letting go of a lot of the licenses they own in America for films because they want to create their own films and they want to create their own TV shows. And this is the way a lot of things are going at the moment.
Yeah.
Another story that I want to mention on the website is Jim Carrey is working on a new TV comedy show. Let's call it Tomedy, and it's for Showtime. He's working with the Masters of Sex producer David Flebot, and they've teamed up to create a show. It's about
David Flebot.
Flebot, Howell. No phlegm.
Flebot.
Just the phleb. Yeah. And they're working on a show. It's set during the 70s stand-up scene in Los Angeles, and it's going to focus on a young comedian trying to make it in the comedy world.
Nice.
It's based on a non-fiction book, and it's great to see Jim Carrey working on stuff like this. It's very intriguing to see him getting into the producing roles. Interesting, if you want to see just exactly how loaded Jim Carrey is, if you go on Comedians in Cars making coffee,
yeah,
having coffee, which is Jerry Seinfeld. Have you seen the one where they go to Jim Carrey's studio?
That's a great online box set, yeah, his art studio, yeah.
It's unbelievable. I thought it would be just like a room in his house, yeah. But he's actually got this huge building that's all got all his own artwork in there.
It's really talented. I watched Kick-Ass 2 the other day, and I don't understand why he came out and opposed it. I don't understand how he couldn't see...
Yeah.
When he made it, how violent it was going to be, because he's the one doing half the violence.
I know,
but you know, but then good on it. I mean, it was around the time of one of the big American massacres that happened too often, and so it was nice of him to make that statement. But I do feel sorry for the rest of the cast who have worked really hard on a film and then he turns against it.
Anyway, my goose is cooked. That's everything.
That's everything. So it's time to welcome Balthazar. What's his second name?
Balthazar Cormacure.
Balthazar Cormacure. And why are we interviewing Balthazar? Well, we always say we'll interview anybody if they've got a tenuous link to box sets. Well, Robin Wright is in this new Everest film, and she, of course, is Kevin Spacey's partner in crime in House of Cards. So we can ask him about that, although we've only got 5 minutes. On your marks.
Hello, Jamie.
Hello. Balthazar.
And Howell. Yes. Is that how I pronounce it?
Howell right. And Jamie. Well done. Yeah, it's a Welsh.
Welsh, yeah. My second name is Irish, so it's Cormac. It would be McCormick, yeah, if you know, lived in Iceland.
Iceland, though. Hey, listen, we've got 5 minutes, so we'll power through. I've seen the trailer for this movie. I love Everest movies. One of the best books I've ever read is Edmund Hillary's autobiography. Can't wait for this. It looks so exciting. Where's a question in this? It's based on a true story, isn't it? Has this been covered by any of the other documentaries and things so far that we've...
There are documentaries that have been made about it and countless books, you know. There are like 10 books and endless articles written about this. There's been a lot of controversy about this story since it happened in 96, you know. So it was very interesting to me, you know, approaching this project and having all this material to just, you know, dive into.
Well, yeah, I actually went through a mountain-based documentary phase, Balthazar, and and one of the documentaries I watched was like, I think it was called Disaster on Everest, and it was like from 97, I think, and it's the one that your film's based on, and it's an amazing story. Like, I know that the story in the documentary is an incredible one. Did many of the original, the people involved, the actual real life climbers, help out with the making of the film?
Yeah, I mean, the film is based on the real events and not a singular, you know, book or a movie or anything like that. So what I was really lucky because I was, allowed to listen to, I went to New Zealand, I was allowed to listen to the real tapes that were recorded, you know, from the radio, from the top down to base camp the whole day. And nobody had been, had access to those tapes until now. And it was recorded by Helen Wilton, played by Emily Watson. And that was incredible, you know, to be able to really to listen to it and get the truth of it, you know. And so it was, so that was really what we based it on, you know.
Was it upsetting to listen to those?
Yes, very. I was very emotional. You know, these women, you know, the widow of Rob Hall and Helen Wilton, you know, hadn't listened to it in 18 years. They had pushed this away, and that, you know, nobody was allowed to those tapes, and they opened it up, kind of opened up the wound, you know. But it was also very informational because there was very, you know, detailed information that we could get from it. You know, even dialogue, you know, that we use in the film. So it was fantastic, you know. But they trust us with something very important to them, so we had to, you know, we had to do it right. I was very clear. I didn't want to sanitize the characters. I wanted to, you know, to humanize them, make them real, you know. And they have been very supportive. And then I had David Brashears, and who is one of the, you know, most famous climbers in the world. And Guy Carter was also on the mountain that year to work with us, you know.
Wow.
So did you film a lot of it around Everest, or was it studio based?
No, we filmed. Started in Kathmandu and went all the way to 16,000 feet on the foothills of Everest. That's when everyone started getting sick, and we had to evacuate people in helicopters really quickly because you got to walk up there. You know, you can't. There's not like you can. You know. Go to work and then go home and you know, rest. We had to walk up there for a week or so, and people, you know, had to carry their own stuff, sleep in lodges, unheated lodges. So it was back to like film school, you know, really carrying equipment for the, you know, A-list movie star carrying equipment for the crew.
Balthazar, if I was being taken down the mountain in a helicopter, having struggled, my first question would be, why couldn't we take the helicopter on the way up, Balthazar?
Because you will die as soon as they drop you off, you know. That's as simple as that.
Because you've got to gradually acclimatise.
Yes, you've got to gradually acclimatise, and it takes a long time. And when you're actually making a film, you've got to walk, acclimatise, and make a whole day of shooting. And gets really complicated, you know. And I actually had the problem of... There was a mistake made when I was scouting. I was dropped off in base camp, and I was given an oxygen bottle with the DP to breathe through while the helicopter went to pick up more people, you know. And we found out that we had an empty bottle, you know. So we started, you know, deteriorating pretty fast, you know. We were kind of out of it when the helicopter came to pick us up.
Now, did you find that because they're actors... It would be too easy to say, oh, actors, they're lovies, they're thespians, they can't cope with this stuff. But actually, a lot of them are super fit, they go to the gym a lot. Did you find that the cast coped very well? Or were you... Because you've got a lot of big personalities to manage there on top of all that.
Yeah, that's true, you know. And some of them, you know, were really well prepared for this, went climbing and, trained. And others were less. And we had some, you know, we had some issues with people kind of, falling apart and not wanting to do this because they got really scared and didn't feel like it was the right decision they made.
Who was it, Balthazar? Who was it?
I'm not going to tell you. No, it wasn't Jake, actually. Jake actually, you know, he actually, you know, there's a scene shot with him and you can see his whole face is frozen. That's not makeup, you know. That is real, a frozen face. Even his nostril hairs are frozen, and his eyelids and his inner ear is frozen in that scene. You can almost see that.
God,
I would have thrown a tantrum in that scenario, Balthazar.
Yeah, well, he didn't, you know. I'm not sure he will ever make a film with me again, but that's a whole other question.
So you are on the box set pod at the moment, and we have to mention that you got to direct Robin Wright. What was Robin Wright like to direct?
She is a tough cookie, you know. Sean Penn couldn't even handle her, so it wasn't easy.
And was it?
But she's a lovely actress. I really, you know, I've been a big admirer, you know. Of her as an actress.
You must have been filming this as House of Cards was really exploding as well. So I imagine everyone was asking her about that and talking about that as well.
Yeah, that, and also Michael Kelly, who's a part of that cast too, you know, plays John Cracker in it. So, yeah, we've got a fabulous cast, you know. He exploded actually after Everest, kind of, so I even got lucky there, you know.
Were Netflix, like, holding a gun at you saying, don't damage these two people, they're really important to us?
Well, you know, I wouldn't even listen to that. You know.
It must have been an insurance nightmare, Balthazar. I mean, I'm just thinking about the 3D stuff, right? I'm still kind of undecided on 3D. I loved Avatar, but some films haven't really lived up to the expectation. Is this the film to turn me on to 3D?
I think you will be, you know, totally, you know, you will feel the opposite when you, you know, trust me, go see it in 3D. It is made for 3D. It's perfect in 3D because, you know, it's not, I'm not throwing stuff at your face. You know, you won't be hit with anything, you know, during the screening, but you will see the volume and the depth and the height, you know, and you will just get a more of a, you know, visceral experience out of the cinema.
I am going. Is the next movie you're going to make something that's very indoors, inland, very safe?
Well, I have a Viking movie, which is going to happen in the highlands of Iceland. So, yeah, that could get pretty cold there. No, I, you know, I don't pick my, you know, I don't think about my own well-being when I pick the projects. I pick, you know, what excites me, and I have no idea what that will be.
Yeah. Well, great. Listen, Balthazar, thank you for talking to us. I know we've got to go now. Final question that we always ask everybody. What is your favourite TV box set or film box set ever?
You know, I really liked Fargo. I binge-watched that. That's probably the only thing I binge-watched because I, you know, usually candy. I don't have time to do that. But I did fall into that and I got through it. So it's my only unfavorite. Let's put it that way.
Is it because it was very cold, snowy, and extreme temperatures that you enjoyed that one?
Yeah, and very nasty atmosphere, you know. Yeah. Very, very ironic and nasty. I also thought they weren't going to pull it off because, you know, I really liked the film. And the Coen brothers are, you know, kind of, you know, favorites. So you know, I wasn't sure that they could turn that into a, you know, good TV series. But, you know, I thought it started really well. It had a little weak middle, but it had a great ending, you know?
Yeah. Amazing ending.
Balthazar, thank you for talking to us. Well done for your press junket and good luck with the rest of it. We're going to go and watch the film.
Brilliant. Thanks, guys.
Man, take care.
Thank you. Bye.
There you go. Nice guy.
Nice guy, now, can't complain.
We got the end of his press junket. We were the last interview. I think he was holding it together. Although, you know, I think I'd prefer to be on the side of Everest than do one of those things.
I think he was in, you know, end of the day at work, checking out zone, and, you know, he was ready for ready to hang up the headphones. But he, a nice guy.
So which of the cast were the ones that were kicking off? And
clearly Robin Wright was an issue.
I think she was, yeah.
He pretty much made out she was busting his balls. And... clearly, she was hard work.
Do you reckon?
Who else? Well, I reckon, as well, looking at the cast, Josh Brolin's a bit of a tubby one these days. I reckon he caused a few issues.
I think Brolin struggled.
Possibly Sam Worthington, although he's a bit of a testosterone freak, so maybe he got into it.
He wouldn't have admitted to it. Why don't you let us know, which actor do you think, of all the actors in the world, would struggle the most up Everest? Let us know. studio@theboxsetpod.com. That's your question for this week. Which actor in the world would be most likely to die on the side of Everest? Ooh. studio@theboxsetpod.com.
It sounds quite cruel, but I'm going to go with Maggie Smith just because of the age factor.
Good God, Jamie. Good God.
Is that too close to the bone? Yeah.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.